every conversation we'd ever had, lessened it.
I don't like lies, said Bran, and I knew I'd failed to keep the pain of his revelation from my face. Not even lies of omission. Hard truths can be dealt with, triumphed over, but lies will destroy your soul.
He looked as though he had personal knowledge of it.
That distaste leads me to meddle where perhaps I should step back.
He paused as if to let me speak, but I had no idea where he was going with this. He sat down and took another sip of cocoa.
There were those who thought the truth of Brian's death should be kept from you.
Brian had been my foster father. I remembered waking up shortly after Christmas to Bran's low-key voice in the kitchen. When I came out of my room, Bran told me that the police had found Brian's body in the Kootenay River. Suicide is difficult for werewolves. Even silver bullets don't always defeat the wolf's ability to heal itself. Decapitation is effective, but rather difficult to achieve in a suicidal situation. Drowning works very well. Werewolves are very densely muscled. They tend to have a difficult time swimming even if they want to, because, like chimpanzees, they have too much muscle and not enough fat to float.
Some of the pack would have told you that Brian had an accident. Bran's voice was contemplative. They told me that 14 was too young to deal with a suicide, especially on top of the death of Brian's mate.
Her name was Evelyn, I told him. Bran had a tendency to dismiss the humans around him as if they didn't exist. Samuel once told me that it was because humans were so fragile, and Bran had seen too many of them die. I thought that if I could handle Evelyn's death when I was 14, then by hang, Bran could too. He gave me a quelling look. When I didn't look down, as protocol demanded, his lips turned up before he hid them with the cup.
Evelyn, indeed, he said, then sighed.
When you chose to live alone rather than go to your mother, I agreed to that, too. You had proved your mettle to me. I thought you had earned the right to make your own choices.
His eyes roved around the room.
Do you remember the last time you and I talked?
I nodded and sat down, finally. Even if he wasn't insisting on protocol tonight, it felt awkward to be standing while he was sitting in the chair.
You were 16, he said. Too young for him, and too young to know what it was that he wanted from you.
When Bran had caught Samuel kissing me in the woods, he'd sent me home, then shown up the next morning to tell me that he'd already spoken with my real mother, and she would be expecting me at the end of the week. He was sending me away, and I should pack what I wanted to take. I'd packed all right, but not to go to Portland. I was packed to leave with Samuel. We'd get married, he'd said. It never occurred to me that at 16 I'd have trouble getting married without parental permission. Doubtless Samuel would have had an answer for that as well. We'd planned to move to a city and live outside of any pack. I loved Samuel, had loved him since my foster father had died, and Samuel had taken over his role as my protector. Brian had been a dear, but Samuel was a much more effective defense. Even the women didn't bother me as much once I had Samuel at my back. He'd been funny and charming. Lightheartedness is not a gift often given to werewolves, but Samuel had it in abundance. Under his wing, I learned joy, a very seductive emotion. You told me that Samuel didn't love me, I told Bran, my mouth tasting like sawdust. I don't know how he'd found out what Samuel had planned. You told me he needed a mate who could bear his children. Human women miscarry a little over half of the children they conceive by a werewolf father. They carry to term only those babies who are wholly human. Werewolf women miscarry at the first full moon. But coyotes and wolves can interbreed with viable offspring. So why not Samuel and me? Samuel believed that some of our children would be human, maybe some would be walkers like me, and some would be born werewolves, but they all would live. It wasn't until Bran explained it all to me that I understood the antagonism Leah had toward me, an antagonism that all the other females had adopted.
I should not have told you that way, Bran said.
Are you trying to apologize? I asked. I couldn't understand what Bran was trying to say. I was 16, Samuel may seem young, but he's been a full-grown adult as long as I can remember, so he's, what, 50? 60?
I hadn't worried about it when I had loved him. He'd never acted any older than I. Werewolves didn't usually talk about the past, not the way humans do. Most of what I knew about Bran's history I picked up from my human foster mother, Evelyn. I was stupid and young, I said. I needed to hear what you told me. So if you're looking for forgiveness, you don't need it. Thank you.
He cocked his head. In human form, his eyes were warm hazel, like a sunlit oak leaf.
I'm not apologizing, he said. Not to you. I'm explaining.
Then he smiled, and the resemblance to Samuel, usually faint, was suddenly very apparent.
And Samuel is a wee bit older than 60.
Amusement, like anger, sometimes brought a touch of the old country, Wales, to Bran's voice.
Samuel is my firstborn.
I stared at him, caught by surprise. Samuel had none of the traits of the older wolves. He drove a car, had a stereo system and a computer. He actually liked people, even humans, and Bran used him to interface with police and government officials when it was necessary. Charles was born a few years after you came here with David Thompson, I told Bran as if he didn't know. That was what, 1812? Driven by his association to Bran, I'd done a lot of reading about David Thompson in college. The Welsh-born mapmaker and fur trader had kept journals, but he hadn't ever mentioned Bran by name. I wondered when I read them if Bran had gone by another name, or if Thompson had known what Bran was and left him out of the journals, which were kept, for the most part, more as a record for his employers than as a personal reminiscence.
I came with Thompson in 1809, Bran said. Charles was born in the spring of, I think, 1813. I'd left Thompson in the Northwest Company by then, and the Salish didn't reckon time by the Christian calendar. Samuel was born to my first wife when I was still human.
It was the most I'd ever heard him say about the past. When was that? I asked, emboldened by his uncustomary openness.
A long time ago.
He dismissed it with a shrug.
When I talked to you that night, I did my son a disservice. I have decided that perhaps I was overzealous with the truth, and still only gave you part of it.
Oh?
I told you what I knew, as much as I thought necessary at the time, he said. But in light of subsequent events, I underestimated my son, and led you to do the same.
I've always hated it when he chose to become obscure. I started to object sharply, then realized he was looking away from my face, his eyes lowered. I'd gotten used to living among humans whose body language is less important to communication, so I'd almost missed it. Alphas, especially this alpha, never looked away when others were watching them. It was a mark of how bad he felt that he would do it now. So I kept my voice quiet and said simply, "Tell me now."
"Samuel is old," he said, "nearly as old as I am. His first wife died of cholera. The second of old age. His third wife died in childbirth. His wives miscarried 18 children between them. A handful died in infancy, and only 8 lived to their third birthday. One died of old age, 4 of the plague, 3 of failing the change. He has no living children, and only 1 born before Samuel changed made it into adulthood."
He paused and lifted his eyes to mine.
"This perhaps gives you an idea of how much it meant to him, that in you he found a mate who could give him children less vulnerable to the whims of fate, children who could be born werewolves like Charles was. I have had a long time to think about our talk, and I came to understand that I should have told you this as well. You aren't the only one who has mistaken Samuel for a young wolf."
He gave me a little smile.
"In the days Samuel walked as human, it was not uncommon for a 16-year-old to marry a man much older than she was. Sometimes the world shifts its ideas of right and wrong too fast for us to keep up with it."
Would it have changed how I felt to know the extent of Samuel's need? A passionate, love-starved teenager confronted with cold facts? Would I have seen beyond the numbers to the pain that each of those deaths had cost?
I don't think it would have changed my decision. I knew that, because I still wouldn't have married someone who didn't love me. But I think I would have thought more kindly of him. I would have left him a letter or called him after I reached my mother's house. Perhaps I'd even have gathered the courage to talk to him if I hadn't been so hurt and angry. I refused to examine how Bran's words changed my feelings about Samuel now. It wouldn't matter anyway. I was going home tomorrow.
There were also some things I didn't know to tell you.
Bran smiled, but it wasn't a happy smile.
I sometimes believe my own press, you know. I forget that I don't know everything. 2 months after you left, Samuel disappeared.
He was angry at your interference? Bran shook his head.
At first, maybe, but we talked that out the day you left. He would have been more angry if he hadn't felt guilty about taking advantage of a child's need.
He reached out and patted my hand.
He knew what he was doing, and he knew what you would have felt about it, whatever he tells himself or you. Don't make him out to be the victim.
Not a problem. I won't. So, if he wasn't angry with you, why did he leave?
I know you understand most of what we are because you were raised among us, Bran told me slowly. But sometimes even I miss the larger implications. Samuel saw in you the answer to his pain and not the answer to his heart. But that wasn't all Samuel felt for you. I doubt he knew it himself.
What do you mean? I asked.
He pined when you left, Bran said, the old-fashioned wording sounding odd coming from the young man he looked to be. He lost weight. He couldn't sleep. After the first month, he spent most of his time as a wolf.
What do you think was wrong with him? I asked carefully.
He was grieving over his lost mate, said Bran. Werewolves aren't that different from our wild cousins in some respects. It took me too long to figure it out, though. Before I did, he left us without a word. For 2 years I waited for the newspapers to report his body discovered in the river like Brian's had been. Charles tracked Samuel down when he finally started to use the money in his bank account. He'd bought some papers and gone back to college.
Samuel had been through college at least once before that I knew of, for medicine.
He became a medical doctor again. Set up a clinic in Texas for a while, then came back to us about 2 years ago.
He didn't love me, I said. Not as a man loves a woman.
No, agreed Bran, but he had chosen you as his mate.
He stood up abruptly and put on his coat.
Don't worry about it now. I just thought you ought to know. Sleep in tomorrow.
Chapter 7 I ventured out to the gas station the next morning in my borrowed coat and bought a breakfast burrito. It was hot, if not tasty, and I was hungry enough to eat almost anything. The young man working the till looked as though he'd have liked to ask questions, but I cowed him with my stare. People around here know better than to get into staring contests. I wasn't aware of anything, but he didn't know that because he wasn't either. It wasn't nice to intimidate him, but I wasn't feeling very nice. I needed to do something, anything, and I was stuck waiting here all morning. Waiting meant worrying about what Jessie was suffering at the hands of her captors, and thinking of Mac, and wondering what I could have done to prevent his death. It meant reliving the old humiliation of having Bran tell me the man I loved was using me. I wanted to be out of Aspen Creek, where the memories of being 16 and alone tried to cling no matter how hard I flinched away. But obedience to Bran was too ingrained. Especially when his orders made sense. I didn't have to be nice about it, though. I'd started back to the motel, my breath raising a fog and the snow crunching beneath my shoes, when someone called out my name.
Mercy!
I looked across the highway where a green truck had pulled over, evidently at the sight of me, but the driver didn't look familiar. The bright morning sun glittering on the snow made it hard to pick out details, so I shaded my eyes with my hand and veered toward him for a better look. As soon as I changed directions, the driver turned off the truck, hopped out, and jogged across the highway.
"I just heard that you were here," he said. "But I thought you'd be long gone this morning, or else I'd have stopped in earlier."
The voice was definitely familiar,
but it didn't go with the curling red hair and unlined face. He looked puzzled for a moment, even hurt, when I didn't recognize him immediately. Then he laughed and shook his head.
I forgot, even though every time I look in a mirror, it still feels like I'm looking at a stranger.
The eyes, pale blue and soft, went with the voice, but it was his laugh that finally clued me in.
Dr. Wallace? I asked. Is that really you?
He tucked his hands in his pockets, tilted his head, and gave me a wicked grin.
Sure as moonlight, Mercedes Thompson. Sure as moonlight.
Carter Wallace was the Aspen Creek veterinarian. No, he didn't usually treat the werewolves, but there were dogs, cats, and livestock enough to keep him busy. His house had been the nearest to the one I grew up in, and he'd helped me make it through those first few months after my foster parents died. The Dr. Wallace I'd known growing up had been middle-aged and balding, with a belly that covered his belt buckle. His face and hands had been weathered from years spent outside in the sun. This man was lean and hungry, his skin pale and perfect like that of a 20-year-old. But the greatest difference was not in his appearance. The Carter Wallace I'd known was slow-moving and gentle. I'd seen him coax a skunk out of a pile of tires without it spraying everything, and keep a frightened horse still with his voice while he clipped away the barbed wire it had become tangled in. There had been something peaceful about him, solid and true, like an oak. Not anymore. His eyes were still bright and kind, but there was also something predatory that peered out at me. The promise of violence clung to him until I could almost smell the blood.
How long have you been wolf? I asked.
A year last month, he said. I know, I swore I'd never do it. I knew too much about the wolves, and not enough. But I had to retire a year before last because my hands quit working right.
He looked down a little anxiously at his hands and relaxed a bit as he showed me he could move all his fingers easily.
I was all right with that. If there is anything a vet gets used to, especially around here, it is aging and death. Jerry started in on me again, but I'm stubborn. It took more than a little arthritis in Jerry to make me change my mind.
Jerry was his son and a werewolf. What happened? I asked.
Bone cancer.
Dr. Wallace shook his head.
It was too far gone, they said. Nothing but months in a bed hoping you'd die before the morphine quits working on the pain. Everyone has their price, and that was more than I could bear. So I asked Bran.
Most people don't survive the change if they're already too sick, I said.
Bran says I'm too stubborn to die.
He grinned at me again, and the expression was beginning to bother me, because it had an edge that Dr. Wallace's, my Dr. Wallace's, had never had. I'd forgotten how odd it was to know someone from both sides of the change, forgotten just how much the wolf alters the human personality, especially when the human wasn't in control.
I thought I'd be practicing again by now, Dr. Wallace said. But Bran says, not yet.
He rocked a little on his heels and closed his eyes, as if he could see something I didn't.
It's a smell of blood and meat.
I'm all right as long as nothing is bleeding.
He whispered the last sentence, and I heard the desire in his voice. He gathered himself together with a deep breath, then looked at me with eyes only a shade darker than the snow.
You know, for years I've said that werewolves aren't much different from other wild predators.
Like the great white, he told me, or the grizzly bear. I remember, I said.
Grizzly bears don't attack their families, Mercy. They don't crave violence and blood.
He closed his eyes.
I almost killed my daughter a few days ago because she said something I disagreed with. If Bran hadn't stopped by,
he shook his head.
I've become a monster, not an animal. I'll never be able to be a vet again. My family never will be safe. Not while I'm alive.
The last two words echoed between us.
Damn, damn, and damn some more, I thought. He should have had more control by now.
If he'd been a wolf for a full year and still couldn't control himself when he was angry, he'd never have the control he needed to survive. Wolves who can't control themselves are eliminated for the safety of the pack. The only question really was why Bran hadn't already taken care of it. But I knew the answer to that. Dr. Wallace had been one of the few humans Bran considered a friend.
I wish Jerry could make it back for Thanksgiving, Dr. Wallace told me. But I'm glad I got a chance to see you before you left again.
Why isn't Jerry here? I asked. Jerry had always traveled on business for Bran, but surely he could come back to see his father before... Dr. Wallace brushed his hand over my cheek, and I realized I was crying.
He's on business. He's in charge of keeping an eye on the lone wolves who live where there is no pack to watch them. It's important.
It was. But since Dr. Wallace was going to die soon, Jerry should be here.
Living's easier than dying most times, Mercy girl, he said kindly, repeating my foster father's favorite saying. Dance when the moon sings, and don't cry about troubles that haven't yet come.
His smile softened, and for a minute I could see the man he used to be quite clearly.
It's cold out here, Mercy, and that coat isn't helping you much. Go get warm, girl.
I didn't know how to say goodbye, so I didn't. I just turned and walked away. When the clock in the motel room ticked over to noon, I walked out to the van which Charles, or Carl, had parked just outside the door to number one. If Adam isn't ready to go, he'll just have to find another ride. I can't stand another minute here. I opened the back to check my antifreeze because the van had a small leak I hadn't fixed yet. When I shut the back hatch, Samuel was just there, holding a bulging canvas bag. What are you doing? I asked warily.
Didn't my father tell you?
He gave me the lazy grin that had always had the power to make my heart beat faster. I was dismayed to see that it still worked.
He's sending me with you. Someone's got to take care of the rogues who attacked Adam, and he's barely mobile.
I turned on my heel, but stopped because I had no idea where to find Bran. And because Samuel was right, damn him, we needed help. Happily, before I had to come up with something suitable to say in apology for my too obvious dismay, the door to room one opened. Adam looked as though he'd lost 20 pounds in the last 24 hours. He was wearing borrowed sweatpants and an unzipped jacket over the bare skin of his chest. Most of the visible skin was bruised, mottled technicolor with purple, blue, and black, touched with lighter spots of red, but there were no open wounds. Adam was always meticulous in his dress and grooming. But his cheeks were dark with stubble, and his hair was uncombed. He limped slowly onto the sidewalk and kept a tight grip on a cane. I hadn't expected him to be walking this soon, and my surprise must have shown on my face, because he smiled faintly.
Motivation aids healing, he said. I need to find Jesse. Motivation aids stupidity, muttered Samuel beside me. And Adam's smile widened, though it wasn't a happy smile anymore. I have to find Jesse, was all that Adam said in reply to Samuel's obvious disapproval. Mercy, if you hadn't arrived when you did, I'd have been a dead man. Thank you.
I hadn't figured out yet exactly what our relationship was, and knowing that Bran had told him to look after me hadn't helped. Even so, I couldn't resist the urge to tease him. He took life so seriously. Always happy to come to your rescue, I told him lightly, and was pleased at the temper that flashed in his eyes before he laughed. He had to stop moving and catch his breath.
Damn it, he told me with his eyes shut. Don't make me do that.
Samuel had stepped unobtrusively closer, but relaxed when Adam resumed his forward progress without toppling over. I opened the sliding door behind the passenger seat. Do you want to lie down? I asked him. Or would you rather sit up on the bench seat? Sitting shotgun is out. You need something easier to get in and out of.
I'll sit up, Adam grunted. Ribs still aren't happy about lying down.
When he got close to the van, I backed out of the way and let Samuel help him up.
Mercy, said Bran behind my shoulder, surprising me because I'd been paying attention to the expression on Adam's face.
He was carrying a couple of blankets.
I meant to get here sooner to tell you that Samuel was coming with you, Bran said, handing the blankets to me. But I had business that took a little longer than I expected.
Did you know that you were sending him with me when you talked to me last night? I asked. He smiled.
I thought it was probable, yes, though I had another talk with Adam after I left you, and it clarified some things. I'm sending Charles to Chicago with a couple of wolves for a backup.
He smiled wider. A nasty, predatory smile.
He will find out who is trying to create new wolves without permission, and see that it is stopped in such a way that we'll not see a problem like this again.
Why not send Samuel and give me Charles?
Samuel has too weak a stomach to handle Chicago, said Adam, sounding breathless.
I glanced at him and saw that he was sitting upright on the short middle bench seat, a sheen of sweat on his forehead.
Samuel is a doctor and dominant enough to keep Adam from eating anyone until he gets better, responded Samuel, climbing back out of the van and snatching the blankets out of my hands.
Bran's smile softened with amusement.
Samuel was gone for a long time, he explained. Other than Adam, I think that only Daryl, Adam's second, has ever met him. Until we know what is going on, I'd rather not have everyone know I'm investigating matters.
We think the time is coming when we will no longer be able to hide from the humans, said Samuel, who had finished wrapping Adam in the blankets. But we'd rather control how that happens than have a group of murdering wolves reveal our existence before we're ready.
I must have looked shocked, because Bran laughed.
It's only a matter of time, he said. The Fae are right. Forensics, satellite surveillance, and digital cameras are making the keeping of our secrets difficult. No matter how many Irish wolfhounds and English mastiffs George Brown breeds and crossbreeds, they don't look like werewolves.
Aspen Creek had three or four people breeding very large dogs to explain away odd tracks and sightings. George Brown, a werewolf himself, had won several national titles with his mastiffs. Dogs, unlike most cats, tended to like werewolves just fine. Are you looking for a poster boy like Kieran McBride? I asked.
Nope, Adam grunted. There aren't any Kieran McBrides who make it as werewolves. Harmless and cute, we are not. But he might be able to find a hero, a police officer, or someone in the military.
You knew about this? I asked.
I'd heard rumors.
What we don't need right now is a murdering bastard running free around the Tri-Cities using werewolves to kill people, Bran said.
He looked over my shoulder at his son.
Find the blackguard and eliminate him before he involves the humans, Samuel.
Bran was the only person I knew who could use words like blackguard and make them sound like swear words. But then he could have said bunny rabbit in that tone of voice and weakened my spine with the same shiver of fear. But I shivered more from the cold than fear. In the Tri-Cities, it was still above freezing most days. It wasn't particularly cold for November in Montana. For instance, my nostrils weren't sticking together when I breathed, so it wasn't 10 below zero yet, but it was considerably colder than I was used to.
"Where's your coat?"
asked Bran, his attention drawn to my chattering teeth.
"I left it in the room," I said. "It's not mine."
"You are welcome to it."
"I'm out here now," I said.
He shook his head.
"You'd better get going, then, before you freeze to death."
He looked at Samuel.
"Keep me apprised."
"Bran," said Adam. "Thank you."
Bran smiled and brushed past me so he could reach in the van and take one of Adam's battered hands in a gentle grip.
"Anytime."
When he stepped back, he shut the sliding door with just the right amount of push so it didn't bounce back open. It had taken me 3 months to learn how to do it right. He reached into the pocket of his coat and gave me a card. It was plain white, with his name and two phone numbers in simple black lettering.
"So you can call me if you want to," he said. "The top number is my cell phone, so you won't have to risk talking to my wife."
"Bran," I asked him impulsively, "what is it that Jerry is doing that is so important he can't come home to be with Dr. Wallace?"
"Feeling sorry for himself," snapped Samuel.
Bran put a hand on Samuel's arm, but spoke to me.
"Carter's case is tragic and unusual. Usually when a wolf lives through the change but doesn't survive his first year, it is because the human cannot control the instincts of the wolf."
"I thought it was always a matter of control," I told Bran. He nodded his head.
"It is, but in Carter's case, it is not a lack of self-control. It is too much."
"He doesn't want to be a werewolf," said Samuel. "He doesn't want to feel the fire of the killing instinct or the power of the chase."
For a moment, the sun caught Samuel's eyes, and they glittered.
"He's a healer, not a taker of life."
"Ah," I thought, "that rankled, didn't it, Dr. Samuel Cornick?" Samuel hadn't been given to in-depth talks,
although that might have been as much a function of my age as his inclination. But I remember that he had trouble sometimes, because his instinct to heal was not as strong as his instinct to kill. He told me that he always made certain to eat well before performing any kind of surgery. Did he think that Dr. Wallace was the better man for choosing not to live with that conflict?
Unless Carter allows the wolf to become part of him, he can't control it.
Bran's mouth turned down.
He's dangerous, and he gets more dangerous every moon, Mercy. But all it would take was for him to compromise his damn hard-headed morals just once so he can accept what he is, and he'd be fine. But if it doesn't happen soon, it won't happen at all. I can't let him see another full moon.
Jerry's the one who talked him into changing, said Samuel, sounding tired. He knows the time is coming when someone is going to have to deal with Carter. If he's here, it will be his duty, and he can't handle that.
I'll take care of it, said Bran, taking a deep breath. I've done it before.
He moved a hand on Samuel's arm to his shoulder.
Not everyone is as strong as you, my son.
There was a world of shared sorrow in his words and in his posture, and I remembered the three of Samuel's children who hadn't survived the change.
Get in the van, Mercy, said Samuel. You're shivering.
Bran put his hands on my shoulders and kissed me on the forehead, then ruined it by saying,
Let the boys take care of this, eh, Mercedes?
Sure thing, I said, stepping away from him. Take care, Bran. I stalked around the front of the bus. The only reason I wasn't muttering under my breath was because the werewolves would all hear what I was saying. I started the van. It protested because of the cold, but not too much. I let it warm up while Bran said a few last words to Samuel.
How well does Bran know you? Asked Adam quietly.
The noise of the engine and the radio would most likely keep the others from hearing us. Not very well if he thinks that I'll leave things to you and Samuel, I muttered.
That's what I was hoping,
he said with enough satisfaction that I jerked around to look at him. He smiled tiredly.
Samuel's good, Mercy. But he doesn't know Jessie, doesn't care about her. I'm not going to be good for much for a while. I need you for Jessie's sake.
The passenger door opened, and Samuel pulled himself up into the seat and shut the door.
Da means well, Sam told me as I started backing out, proving that he knew me better than his father did. He's used to dealing with people who listen when he tells them something. Mercy, he's right, though. You aren't up to dealing with werewolf business.
Seems to me that she's been dealing just fine, Adam said mildly. She killed two of them in as many days and came out of it without a scratch.
Luck, said Samuel.
Is it?
In my rearview mirror, I saw Adam close his eyes as he finished in almost a whisper.
Maybe so. When I was in the army, we kept lucky soldiers where they would do us the most good.
Adam wants me to help find Jessie, I told Samuel, putting my foot on the gas as we left Aspen Creek behind us. The conversation went downhill from there. Adam dropped out after a few pointed comments and sat back to enjoy the fireworks. I didn't remember arguing with Samuel much before, but I wasn't a love-struck 16-year-old anymore either. After I pointedly quit talking to him, Samuel unbuckled his seatbelt and slipped between the front seats to go back and sit next to Adam.
Never argue with Mercy about something she cares about,
Adam advised, obviously having enjoyed himself hugely.
Even if she stops arguing with you, she'll just do whatever she wants anyway.
Shut up and eat something, growled Samuel, sounding not at all like his usual self.
I heard him lift the lid on a small cooler, and the sweet iron smell of blood filled the van.
Mmm,
said Adam without enthusiasm.
Raw steak.
But he ate it, then slept. After a while, Samuel came back to the front and belted himself in.
I don't remember you being so stubborn, he said.
Maybe I wasn't, I agreed. Or maybe you didn't used to try to order me around. I'm not a member of your pack or Bran's pack. I'm not a werewolf. You have no right to dictate to me as if I were. He grunted, and we drove a while more in silence. Finally, he said,
Have you had lunch?
I shook my head. I thought I'd stop in Sandpoint. It's grown since last time I drove through there.
Tourists, said Samuel in disgust. Every year there are more and more people.
I wondered if he was remembering what it had been like when he'd first been there. We stopped and got enough fried chicken to feed a little league team, or two werewolves, with a little left over for me. Adam ate again with restrained ferocity. Healing was energy-draining work, and he needed all the protein he could get. When he was finished and we were back on the road with Samuel once again in the front, I finally asked, "What happened the night you were attacked? I know you've told Bran and probably Samuel too already, but I'd like to know." Adam wiped his fingers carefully on the damp towelette that had come with our chicken. Apparently he didn't think it was finger-licking good.
"I'd pulled the pack in to introduce Mac and to tell them about your adventures with his captors."
I nodded.
"About 15 minutes after the last of them left, about 3:30 in the morning, someone knocked on the door. Mac had just managed to regain his human form, and he jumped up to answer the door."
There was a pause, and I adjusted the rearview mirror so I could see Adam's face, but I couldn't read his expression.
"I was in the kitchen, so I don't know exactly what happened, but from the sounds, I'd say they shot him as soon as he opened the door."
"Which was stupid," commented Samuel. "They'd know you had to hear the shots. Even a trank gun makes a pretty good pop."
Adam started to shrug, then stopped with a pained expression.
"Damned if... excuse me, Mercedes. I'll be darned if I know what they were thinking."
"They didn't kill him on purpose, did they?" I said. I'd been thinking, too. A gun with silver bullets is a much more certain thing than a dart full of experimental drugs.
"I don't think so," Samuel agreed. "It looked like a massive allergic reaction to the silver." "There was silver in the dart Mercedes found, just like Charles thought?" asked Adam.
"Yes," said Samuel. "I've sent the dart off to the lab along with a sample of Mac's blood for proper analysis, but it looks to me as though they combined silver nitrate with DMSO and Special K."
"What?" I asked.
"Special K is ketamine," Adam said. "It's been used as a recreational drug for a while, but it started out as an animal tranquilizer. It doesn't work on werewolves. Silver nitrate is used to develop film. What's DMSO?
"Silver nitrate is a convenient way to get silver in a solution," Samuel said. "It's used to treat eye infections, too, though I wouldn't recommend it for a werewolf."
"I've never heard of a werewolf with an eye infection," I said, though I understood his point. He smiled at me, but continued to talk to Adam.
"DMSO, dimethyl sulfoxide. It has a lot of odd properties, but the one of most interest here is that it can carry other drugs with it across membranes."
I stared at the road ahead of me and put my right hand in front of the heater to warm it. The seals on my windows needed replacing, and the heater wasn't keeping up with the Montana air. Funny, I didn't remember being cold on the way over. No room for simple discomfort when you are trying to save someone, I guess. "There was something in chem lab my freshman year," I said. "We mixed it with peppermint oil and put a finger in it. I could taste peppermint."
"Right," said Samuel. "That's the stuff. So take DMSO and mix it with a silver solution, and presto, the silver is carried throughout the werewolf's body, poisoning as it goes, so that the tranquilizer, in this case ketamine, goes to work without interference from the werewolf metabolism that would normally prevent the drug from having any effect at all."
"You think Mac died from the silver rather than an overdose of ketamine?" asked Adam. "They only shot him twice. I took at least 4 hits, maybe more."
"The more recent exposure you have to silver, the worse the reaction," said Samuel. "I guess that if the boy hadn't spent the last few months in their tender care being dosed up with silver, he'd have made it just fine."
"Obviously the silver nitrate and the ketamine are relatively easily obtainable," Adam said after a while. "What about this DMSO?
"I could get it. Good stuff is available by prescription. I bet you could buy it at any veterinary supply, too."
"So they'd need a doctor?" I asked. But Samuel shook his head.
"Not for the veterinary supply. And I'd expect you could get it fairly easily from a pharmacy, too. It's not one of the drugs they'd track carefully. I'd expect they could make as much of their cocktail as they wanted to without much trouble."
"Great."
Adam closed his eyes, possibly envisioning an invading army armed with tranquilizer dart guns. "So they killed Mac," I said when it became apparent that Adam wasn't going to continue. "Then what happened?"
"I came charging out of the kitchen like an idiot, and they darted me, too."
Adam shook his head.
"I've grown used to being damn near bulletproof, Served me right. Whatever they gave me knocked me for a loop, and when I woke up, I was locked up, wrist and ankle, in cuffs. Not that I was in any shape to do anything. I was so groggy I could barely move my head.
"Did you see who they were?" I asked. "I know one of them was the human who accompanied the werewolf I killed at the garage. I smelled him in Jesse's room." Adam shifted on the bench seat, pulling a little against the seatbelt.
"Adam."
Samuel's voice was quiet, but forceful. Adam nodded and relaxed a little, stretching out his neck to release the buildup of tension.
"Thank you. It's harder when I'm angry. Yes, I knew one of them, Mercedes. Do you know how I became a werewolf?"
The question seemed to come from left field, but Adam always had a reason for everything he said. "Only that it was during Vietnam," I answered. "You were special forces."
"Right," he agreed. "Long-range recon. They sent me and five other men to take out a particularly nasty warlord, an assassination trip. We'd done it before."
"The warlord was a werewolf?" I asked. He laughed without humor.
"Slaughtered us. It was one of his own people who killed him while he was eating poor old McHugh."
He shut his eyes and whispered,
"I can still hear him scream."
We waited, Samuel and I, and after a moment, Adam continued.
"All the warlord's people ran and left us alone. At a guess, they weren't certain he was really dead, even after he'd been beheaded. After a while, a long while, though I didn't realize that until later, I found I could move. Everyone was dead except Spec 4 Christensen and me. We leaned on each other and got out of there somehow, hurt badly enough that they sent us home. Christensen was a short-timer anyway, and I guess they thought I was mostly crazy, raving about wolves. They shipped us out of there fast enough that none of the docs commented about how quickly we were recovering." "Are you all right?" asked Samuel.
Adam shivered and pulled the blankets closer around himself.
"Sorry. I don't talk about this often. It's harder than I expected. Anyway, one of my army buddies who'd come back to the States a few months earlier heard I was home and came to see me. We got drunk, or at least I tried. I just started noticing that it took an awful lot of whiskey to do anything, but it loosened me up enough that I told him about the werewolf. Thank goodness I did, because he believed me. He called in a relative, and between them they persuaded me that I was going to grow furry and kill something the next full moon. They pulled me into their pack and kept everyone safe until I had enough control to do it myself."
"And the other man who was wounded?" I asked.
"Christensen?"
He nodded.
"My friends found him. It should have been in time, but he'd come home to find that his wife had taken up with another man. He walked into his house and found his bags packed and his wife and her lover waiting with the divorce papers."
"What happened?" asked Samuel.
"He tore them to pieces."
His eyes met mine in the rearview mirror.
"Even in that first month, if you get angry enough, it is possible to change."
"I know," I told him. He gave me a jerky nod.
"Anyway, they managed to persuade him to stay with a pack, who taught him what he needed to know to survive. But as far as I know, he never did join a pack officially. He's lived all these years as a lone wolf."
A lone wolf is a male who either declines to join a pack or cannot find a pack who will take him in. The females, I might add, are not allowed that option. Werewolves have not yet joined the 20th century, let alone the 21st, as far as women are concerned. It's a good thing I'm not a werewolf. Or maybe it is a pity. Someone needs to wake them up. "Christensen was one of the wolves who came to your house?" I asked. He nodded.
"I didn't hear him or see him. He stayed away from me. But I could smell him. There were several humans and three or four wolves."
"You killed two," I told him. "I killed a third." I tried to remember what I'd smelled in his house, but I had only been tracking Jesse. There had been so many of Adam's pack in the house, and I only knew some of them by name. I'd know the man, the human who confronted Mac and me earlier that night, but no one else for certain.
"I'm pretty sure they intended I stay out until they'd done whatever they came for, but their whole plan was a botched job," Adam said. "First, they killed Mac. Obviously, from their attempt to take him at your shop, they wanted him, but I don't think they meant to kill him in my house.
They left him on my doorstep, I said.
Did they?
Adam frowned.
A warning?
I could see him roll the thought around, and he came up with the same message I had.
Stay out of our business, and you won't end up dead.
Quick thinking for the disposal of a body they didn't know they were going to have, I commented. Someone drove to my house to dump his body and was gone when I came outside. They left some people at your house who took off hellbent for leather, probably with Jesse. I made it to your house in time to kill the last werewolf you were fighting. I tried to think about what time that was. 4:30 in the morning or thereabouts is my best guess. Adam rubbed his forehead. Samuel said,
So they shot Mac, shot Adam, then waited around until Mac died. They dropped the body at your house. Then Adam woke up and they grabbed Jesse and ran, leaving three werewolves behind to do something. Kill Adam? But then, why take Jesse? Presumably they weren't supposed to just die.
The first wolf I fought was really new, I said slowly. If they were all that way, they might have just gotten carried away. And the others fled because they couldn't calm them down.
Christensen isn't new, said Adam.
One of the wolves was a woman, I told him. The one I killed was a buff color, almost like Leah, but darker. The other one was a more standard color, grays and white. I don't remember any markings.
Christensen is red gold, Adam said.
So did they come to kidnap Jesse in the first place? Or was her kidnapping the result of someone trying to make the best of a screw-up?
Jesse.
Adam sounded hoarse, and when I glanced back at him, I could see that he hadn't heard Samuel's question.
I woke up because Jesse screamed. I remember now.
I found a pair of broken handcuffs on the floor of your living room. I slowed the van so I didn't tailgate an RV that was creeping up the side of the mountain we were climbing. I didn't have to slow down much. Silver wrist cuffs, and the floor was littered with glass, dead werewolves, and furniture. I expect the ankle cuffs were around there somewhere. I thought of something. Maybe they just came to get Mac and maybe punish Adam for taking him in? Samuel shook his head.
Mercy, you they might leave warnings for, or try to teach a lesson. A pack of newbie werewolves, especially if they're headed by an experienced wolf, is not going to tick off an alpha just to punish him for interfering in their business. In the first place, there's no better way I can think of to get the Maroc ticked off. In the second place, there's Adam himself. He's not just the Columbia Basin alpha. He's damn near the strongest alpha in the U.S., present company excluded, of course.
Adam grunted, unimpressed with Samuel's assessment.
We don't have enough information to make an educated guess at what they wanted. Mac's dead, either accidentally or on purpose. They have killed me, and they took Jesse. The human you knew implies that it has something to do with Mac's story, and Christensen's presence implies it has something to do with me. I'll be darned if I know what Mac and I have in common.
Mercy, said Samuel.
I forgot to tell you that I joined the secret society of villains while I was away, I told Samuel, exasperated. I am now trying to put together a harem of studly, muscle-bound werewolves. Please, remember, I didn't know Mac until he dropped in my lap sometime after the villain screwed up his life. Samuel, having successfully baited me, reached over and patted my leg. I just happened to glance at Adam's face, and I saw his eyes lighten from chocolate to amber as his gaze narrowed on Samuel's hand before I had to return my eyes to the road to make sure the RV ahead of me hadn't slowed down again. There were four cars trailing slowly behind us up the mountain.
Don't touch her, whispered Adam.
There was a shadow of threat in his voice, and he must have heard it too, because he added,
Please.
The last word stopped the nasty comment I'd readied because I remembered that Adam was still hurt, still struggling to control his wolf, and the conversation we'd been having hadn't been designed to calm him. But it wasn't my temper I should have been worried about. Samuel's hand turned until his fingers spanned the top of my thigh, and he squeezed. It wasn't hard enough to hurt. I'm not certain Adam would have even noticed, except that Samuel accompanied it by a throaty half-growl of challenge. I didn't wait to see what Adam would do. I yanked the wheel to the right and slammed on the brakes as soon as the van was on the shoulder of the road. I unsnapped my seatbelt and twisted around to meet Adam's yellow gaze. He was breathing heavily, his reaction to Samuel's taunt tempered by the pain my jerky driving had caused. "You," I said firmly, pointing at him, "stay right there." Sometimes, if you tell them firmly enough, even alphas will listen to commands, especially if you tell them to sit still while they're too hurt to move.
You? I turn my attention to Samuel. Outside, right now.
Then I jerked my leg out from under Samuel's hand and jumped out of the van, narrowly avoiding getting the door taken off as a truck passed by. I wasn't certain either of them would listen to me, but at least I wouldn't have to try to drive with a pair of wolves trying to tear each other apart. However, Samuel opened his door as I stalked around the front of the van. By the time I walked a half dozen steps away from the van, he was beside me, and the van's doors were closed.
"Just what did you think you were doing?"
I yelled at him, raising my voice over the passing cars. "Okay, I was mad, too.
I thought you were here to make sure no one challenged Adam until he was well, not challenge him yourself."
"You don't belong to him," he snapped back, his white teeth clicking together sharply.
"Of course not,"
I huffed in exasperation, and a little in desperation.
"But I don't belong to you either. For Pete's sake, Sam, he wasn't telling you that I belonged to him. Just that he felt like you were invading his territory. He was asking you for help."
Someone should have awarded me a PhD in werewolf psychology and counseling. Surely I deserve something for putting up with this garbage.
"It wasn't a challenge, stupid. He's trying to control his wolf after nearly being killed. Two unmated male werewolves always get territorial in the presence of a female. You know that better than I do. You're supposed to be the one with all this control, and you're behaving worse than he is."
I sucked in air, tainted by the traffic. Samuel paused, then settled his weight on his heels, a sign that he was considering backing off from this fight.
"You called me Sam,"
he said in an odd voice that frightened me as much as the violence I could still smell on him, because I didn't know what was causing him to act like this. The Samuel I knew had been easygoing, especially for a werewolf. I was beginning to think that I wasn't the only one who'd changed over the years. I didn't know how to respond to his comment. I couldn't see what my calling him Sam had to do with anything, so I ignored it.
"How can you help him control himself if your control isn't better than this? What is wrong with you?"
I was honestly bewildered. Samuel was good at calming the dangerous waters. One of his jobs had been teaching the new wolves control so they could be allowed to live. It is not an accident that most werewolves are control freaks like Adam. I didn't know what to do with Samuel, except that he wasn't getting back into that van until he had a handle on whatever was bothering him.
"It isn't just that you are female," he muttered at last,
though I almost didn't hear him because two motorcycles blew past us.
"What is it, then?"
I asked. He gave me an unhappy look, and I realized that he hadn't intended for me to hear what he'd said.
"Mercedes, mercy."
He looked away from me, staring down the slope of the mountains, as if the meadows below held some secret he was looking for.
"I'm as unsettled as a new pup. You eat my control."
"This is all my fault?"
I asked incredulously. It was outside of enough that he was scaring the bejeebers out of me. I certainly wasn't about to accept the blame for it. Unexpectedly, he laughed. And as easily as that, the smoldering anger, the bright violence, and the dominant power that had been making the air around us feel heavier than it could possibly be, floated away. It was just the two of us, and the warm scent of Samuel, who smelled of home and the woods.
"Stay out here and enjoy the diesel fumes, Mercy,"
he said as a delivery van in need of a new engine chugged past us in a cloud of black smoke.
"Give me a few minutes to clear the air with Adam before you come back in."
He turned and took two steps back to the van.
"I'll wave to you."
"No violence," I said. He put his hand over his heart and bowed.
"I swear."
It took long enough that I got worried. But finally he opened the door and called me over. He hadn't rolled down the window because I had the keys and the windows were electric. For some reason I still hadn't tracked down. The windows only worked one at a time, even with the car running. I scooted in the driver's seat and gave Adam a cautious look, but his eyes were closed.
Chapter 8. As soon as roaming quit appearing on my phone, I called Z.
"Who's this?" he answered.
"Mercy," I told him.
"Didn't tell me the pop was for the vampires bus," he said shortly.
I rubbed my face.
I couldn't afford to pay them the percentage you were, I explained, not for the first time.
In the Columbia Basin, which included Richland, Kennewick, and Pasco, as well as the smaller surrounding towns like Burbank and West Richland, every business the vampires considered under their jurisdiction, meaning anyone touched by the supernatural who was too powerless to stand against them, paid them protection money. And yes, just like the mob, the vampires only protect you from themselves. They agreed I could repair their cars instead, and they pay me for parts. That way they save face, and I only have to repair Stefan's bus and an occasional Mercedes or BMW. Stefan's not bad for a vampire.
There was a growl from the seat beside me.
It's okay, Adam told Samuel. We keep an eye on her. And she's right. Stefan's not bad for a vampire. Word is that he runs a little interference, so she's not bothered.
I hadn't known any of the vampires had intended to bother me, or that Stefan would care enough to stop them.
I didn't know that, said Z, who'd obviously overheard Adam's comment. He hesitated.
Vampires are bad news, Mercy. The less you have to do with them, the better, and writing a check and mailing it every month is safer than dealing with them face to face.
I can't afford it, I told him again. I'm still paying the bank, and will be until I'm as old as you are.
Well, it doesn't matter, he said at last. I didn't have to deal with him anyway. Your new supply house sent the wrong part. I sent it back to them and called with a word to their sales manager. The right part should be here on Friday. Best he could do with Thanksgiving tomorrow. I called the number on the vampire's file and left a message. What kind of vampire plays the Scooby-Doo song on his answering machine?
It was a rhetorical question, because he continued.
And a woman came by and said your Polizei friend had sent her.
I rubbed my forehead. I'd forgotten about Tony's girl. Did you figure out what's wrong with her car?
Mercy,
he snapped, insulted. No insult meant. Was it something worth fixing?
Wiring harness is bad, he said.
I grinned, because I'd seen the effect this woman had on I'm married to my job, Tony. You like her, I told him. Z grunted. Did you give her a quote?
Haven't talked to her yet, he said. She's got poor and proud written all over her. She wouldn't let me give her a lift, so she and her kids walked home. She doesn't have a phone number except a work phone.
I laughed to myself. There was more than one reason that Z didn't have the kind of money the older Fae generally amass. Well, I'm probably never going to be rich either. Okay, I said. What kind of deal are we talking about?
I called the Polizei, Z said.
He knew what Tony's name was. He even liked him, though he did his best to hide it. He just disapproved of letting the human authorities get too close. He was right, too. But I don't always follow the rules of wisdom. If I did, I wouldn't be hauling two werewolves in my van. What did he say? I asked.
He said that she has an older boy who's been looking for work after school.
I let him say it. It was just too fun to listen to him squirm. He liked to play the gruff, nasty old man, but he had a marshmallow heart.
With my Tad gone, you're short a pair of hands.
And with Mac dead. I lost interest in teasing the old gremlin. It's fine, Z. If you talk to her, you can tell her that her son can work off the bill. If he works out, I'll offer him Tad's job. I assume you've already fixed the car.
Yeah, he said. You'll have to talk to the lady yourself, though, unless you need me tomorrow, too. She works day shift.
No, I won't need you. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. I'll leave the shop closed, if you would remember to put up a sign in the window.
No problem.
He hesitated.
I might have a lead for you on Jesse. I was just getting ready to call you. One of the Fae who is still in hiding told me she might be able to help, but she wouldn't tell me without talking to you.
Still in hiding meant either that the Grey Lords hadn't noticed her yet, or that she was of the terrible or powerful sort. This time it was Adam who growled. Such are the joys of trying to have a private phone call in the presence of werewolves. Somehow it didn't bother me so much when I was the eavesdropper. We're about an hour out of town, I said. Could you set up a meeting tonight at a place of her choice?
All right, he said,
and hung up. You caught all of that? I asked them.
Adam can't go, Samuel said firmly. No, Adam, You know it yourself.
Adam sighed.
All right. I even agree I'm not fit to be on my own. But I want Mercy there. We can call Daryl and...
Samuel held up a hand.
Mercy, he said. What caused you to bring Adam all the way to Montana rather than calling on his pack for help?
It was stupid, I said.
Maybe. But tell us anyway.
I was trying to get in touch with Daryl, and I suddenly felt uneasy. I remembered a snippet of conversation between Ben and Daryl earlier that night, but in retrospect, it wasn't much.
What were Ben and Daryl doing talking to you?
Asked Adam in that mild voice he used to cozen people into thinking he wasn't angry. I can take care of myself, Adam, I told him. I was taking the trash out and ran into them. All Daryl did was tell Ben to leave me alone. He said, not now. I don't know why I decided it meant he knew something was going to happen.
First you felt uneasy, said Samuel. Then you came up with this stupid reason.
Yes, I felt my face flush.
How do you feel about his pack now?
I opened my mouth, then shut it again. Damn it! Something's wrong. I don't think Adam should go to the pack until he can defend himself. Samuel settled back with a small, smug smile. What? I asked.
You noticed something, Adam said. A scent or something at my house that makes you think someone from my pack is involved. Instincts.
He sounded grim.
I thought it was odd that they came so soon after my wolves left.
I shook my head. Look, I don't know anything.
We're not going to kill anyone, said Samuel. Not on the basis of your instincts, anyway. But what's the harm in being careful?